Hey, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. Today's guest is Austin Helms, an exciting young man who has gone through a lot in a very short amount of time, has had a lot of experiences and opportunities that have led him to where he is today. He is the founder of Ease Plumbing and Ease HVAC, doing some amazing things, some very innovative concepts in the service business and trades world. So we're going to have a great conversation with him today about all of those processes. He's going to share some of his business plan and really hopefully give you some good ideas that you can implement into your organization. So grab a cup of coffee and get ready for this conversation.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
Well, Austin, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you in the studio. We've already been chatting a lot, so I know this is going to be an exciting conversation. Before we get into the meat of the conversation, though, we do have to handle rapid fire. Five randomly selected questions just to get under your skin with unknown point values.
Okay.
You ready?
Hit me.
All right, here we go. Number one, have you ever gotten super lost? If so, what happened?
I think I was running with the Bulls in Spain with my buddy about 4 years ago.
Okay.
And our phones were dead. I just ran around frantically. And then I actually randomly ran into, as crazy as it might sound, a friend from Valdez, North Carolina in Spain.
Spain, running with the Bulls.
Yes.
Or from the Bulls.
Yep.
Okay. I never would have expected that answer from that question. Very cool. We may need to dive more into the running with the Bulls thing. That's pretty awesome. Okay, number two, what interesting skill do you want to learn?
So I come from a family of auctioneers. I have actually done a few auctions myself randomly and kind of coerced. I'm actually sitting to get my auction license as we speak.
Really?
So I want to do benefit auctions and charity auctions just for fun. Also, it's a unique skill that's dying as well as the trades. It's really fun. It's like a heritage to my family.
Yeah, very cool. So that auction rhythm where you're just...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Don't ask me to try because I'm struggling.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, so you wouldn't try it?
I mean, I can try and sell this coffee cup.
All right, let's sell the coffee cup.
All right, so we're just going to pretend it's signed by like Michael Jordan or something.
Okay.
So it's got the Jumpman logo on it.
Yeah.
So who wants to give me a $10 bid? Let me get a $10 bid. Let me get a $10 bid. If you raise your hand.
I got a $10
bid. I got a $10 bid, and I get 15. Anybody want to get 15? Anybody want to get a $15 bid? Let me get a $15 bid, and I got a $15 bid in the back.
I'm just bidding against myself.
Yeah, so. but no, I've got a lot of work to do, and I've probably been to 100 auctions as a kid, and
yeah.
It's just something that not many people can do, and I can sell real estate with it, and if I get my real estate license. But
there you go.
For me, I just want to do the benefit type side of things.
Very cool. I like it. This is fun. If you could enter this number three, if you could interview one historical figure, who would it be? Ask him any questions that you wanted.
Dean Smith. So I'm a Tar Heel.
All right.
And when I was in fourth grade, I did a project on UNC basketball, and I wrote him a note, wrote him a letter, and he wrote back. It was crazy the questions I was asking him as a fourth grader. I was asking him about Vince Carter, Michael Jordan, and how he would deal with these type people. And, you know, because he's dealt with multiple personalities throughout his life.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
Being a Tar Heel and being somebody, and, you know, nobody ever says anything negative about Dean Smith. And, you know, I've actually got to know his son, which has been really unique. But the fact he wrote back a fourth grader in Valdez, North Carolina, was always the coolest thing to me. And if I had a chance and if he was alive, I'd ask for that interview. Hands down, no questions asked.
Man, that would be awesome. Very cool. Number four, which celebrity do you shamelessly follow in the news?
Probably Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
I think if you read like his financial history and about how he, you know, I think his big thing is like when I got my first check, I bought myself a Mercedes and I drove it home. My dad wanted a Mercedes and I drove it home and my mom wanted a Mercedes. And then somebody said, stop spending money, Shaq. And then how he's invested his money. Mm-hmm. And he's also just such a character. Again, another guy that not many people can say a bad thing about. And he is, you know, the life of the room when he walks in.
Mm-hmm.
I also love basketball. And I was that kid that I saw Kobe and Shaq when I was 7 years old in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
at the old Coliseum, I saw Kobe hit a fadeaway shot from the elbow to beat the Hornets, but it was still one of those, the coolest days of my life.
The bad thing about being a Charlotte sports fan is that all of the great sports memories are when I saw somebody beat the Hornets.
Exactly.
It always ends that way. Except this year, now.
Yeah. The buzz is back.
Yeah, the buzz is back. All right, last one, number five. What's your favorite item of what was your favorite item of clothing as a kid?
There's a picture in my room. The Tar Heel fans are going to hate me for this, but I had a full Rashad McCants jersey, and he's kind of been shunned from the UNCI. Mm-hmm. But I've got this picture. My entire room as a kid was Carolina blue. My comforter was blue. The basketballs on the floor were blue. The pillows were blue. My whole outfit was blue. My socks were blue. But that outfit was hands down. I think I was probably 8 or 9 at that point. But all Carolina blue all day.
There you go. So big Carolina fan. Very cool. Well, you passed. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Rapid fire. We'll give you a score of 913. Good work. So again, thank you for joining us today. A mutual friend of ours, Brian Yarman, has recommended you to be a guest on the podcast. Based off of our conversation so far, I'm pretty excited about it. So again, thank you for coming in today. So give us a little bit of who you are. I mean, you're joining us as a representative of Ease Plumbing, founder of Ease Plumbing. Tell us a little bit about how you arrived at that.
So my friends always laugh at me because I always tell people where I'm from, and you've heard it five times already. But at 7 years old, I became an entrepreneur in the great city of Valdez, North Carolina, and where I sold candy out of a shoebox at my sister's basketball games, and that progressed into, and I don't really know why, but you know, I owned a bow and arrow business where I first hired and fired my employees. Where I always tell people I had my biggest breakthrough was at 12 years old. I owned Austin's Amazing Car Wash. I think I made $300 in a summer. And that progressed all throughout high school. I mean, I sold T-shirts. I made movies. I owned vending machines. Just anything I get my hands on as a small-town kid, I did it. Mm-hmm. And getting into college, I went to UNC Chapel Hill, if you didn't catch that already. And, you know, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I didn't really know what. And, you know, my mom always kills me when I say this. I didn't come from much, but I didn't come from much money. Mm-hmm. I came from a whole lot of family, but I didn't come from much money. So it was never for me. It was never like the pursuit of money, but it was the pursuit of, you know, what if I could grow well beyond my means and my kids, grandkids wouldn't have to worry about it. And so in the back of my head, that was always kind of what was ingrained in me. Hey, I'm going to work hard and hey, I want to start businesses. And so, when I went to Chapel Hill, started another business, and that business ended up introducing me to Mike Griffin, who is a charlatan. He went to West Mech. He graduated from UNC as well, and we actually met during a pitch competition I was presenting in. And the irony of all this is there's a lot of Charlotte connections. So I had started a waterless car wash company, and for that whole semester, I was cold calling Carl Howard of Auto Bell.
Okay.
And I was cold calling and cold calling and cold calling. And Mike was actually in, and Carl Howard actually went to Chapel Hill too, but Mike raised his hand and he said, hey, I love your business plan. No, excuse me. He said, I don't like your business plan, but I love your passion. And I could never invest in this business because one of my best friends is Carl Howard.
Gotcha.
And the lights went off. We got to get to know this guy because I want to get to know Carl Howard. The crazy part is, you know, Mike never introduced me to Carl Howard because he wanted to hire me.
Sure.
But a year and a half later, I got to meet Carl, and it was just really funny, the whole story. But, you know, I went to work for Mike under the assumption, you know, if you do not know Mike, Griffin Brothers Companies, they own 10 tire stores in the greater Charlotte area. They're in the landfill, the C&D, construction debris business. They are also in the real estate business, and they own Pine Island Country Club, which is the northwest side of Charlotte. Okay. So a very diverse family. And, you know, he recruited me in the basis of they wanted to start a investment company that invested back into young people, 25 to 35. The criteria was always they had a forward-focused mentality, meaning they had a low burn rate. They didn't want to spend a lot of money. You know, they had a lot of ambition, and they probably didn't come from much money. So he wanted those people that were really gritty, had a lot of fire, energy, passionate, and wanted them to get back into the trades, meaning if you got to get in poop, you got to get in poop.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how we met, and kind of the business plan launched from there. Zoom Up, which while I was at the Griffin family for 2.5 years, invested in 6 businesses that ranged from grease trap and septic pumping to an electrical business to a restoration company to heating and air. And you know, I left the family because I was trying to pursue my own business plan. Mm-hmm. And that ended up not working out. And then they kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, roped me back in to starting a plumbing business where I had no experience.
Yeah. It's interesting. So you just hit on a lot of different things. So I want to kind of go back and unpack some of these. You were an entrepreneur as a kid, so you always had this entrepreneurship mindset. At what point in time did you actually embrace that? Because there's a lot of folks that I've talked to, and including myself, to a point where it took me a long time in my life to actually, I guess, either admit or come to terms with the entrepreneur mindset. You seem to embrace that early on.
Yeah, my mom can tell you the exact moment. I was 15, and there's irony in all my stories, but I was working at Chick-fil-A, mm-hmm. and I think I came home one day, and I told her that, I said, I will never work for the man again. I said, I will be the man. And I had he was just a jerk of a boss, mm-hmm. Not the operator of the Chick-fil-A, but just the guy who was my manager.
Director.
Yeah, and I was, you know, making $7.25 an hour, whatever it was, and I guess it still is to this day, and I just said, I'm going to do something on my own. So I told you about Austin's amazing car wash as a 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. Well, I was 15, about to turn 16. I drove a 1990 Mazda B2600i pickup truck, total chick magnet.
Yeah.
And I launched Austin's amazing car wash out of my truck that summer, ended up making not $300, but $3,000. Mm-hmm. And that was the point I knew, hey, there might be something different in me that's unlike other people. And, you know, there was just something about me sending a text to a teacher or my mom and dad's friend or then a friend of a friend, then I got referrals, mm-hmm. that was pretty special to me that I was like, wow, you know, there's something here. And so, no, it's $3,000 and not a ton of money, but to a 16-year-old, it was incredible.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, every experience in life brings you to kind of the next step, right? I mean, so I was a former Chick-fil-A employee years ago and learned a lot of the customer service side of things. They do a really good job teaching that. And you take that to your next experience and your next experience and your next experience, and you build upon it. One of the really interesting things about this kind of the timeline that you just threw out there was the connections that were made. So all of those experiences led you up to going to college, right?
Yep.
Going to college, and then you're now, because of your entrepreneurial mindset, your excitement around business, you get involved in this kind of Shark Tank pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings you to your next connection point.
Yep.
Really? And it's very, that's a really cool experience. So you were trying to pitch in that competition the car wash.
Exactly. It was a waterless car wash company.
Okay.
That was a wash while you shop. So we were partnering with shopping centers and washing cars, and we were actually doing it.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
So as people, how do you wash a car without water? We had this solution.
Mm-hmm.
It was a polymer-based solution that was a wash and wax all-in-one.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, it was like a Windex bottle. You could spray it on, wipe it off with a nice cloth, and it would shine.
Yeah. You know, there's another business out there that does that. That's a big thing now.
Oh, yeah. I know. I just didn't have two nickels to rub together when I graduated college, so I had to go get a job.
So it's a great idea.
Yeah, it was good. It worked for us.
So I'm just curious because it's in my brain. So you mentioned Auto Bell.
Mm-hmm.
So for those that are watching or are listening to this, Auto Bell is a substantial, I guess, a regional car wash chain.
Yeah, so at that time they had like 70 locations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to quote and say they have 90, but they're one of the biggest U.S.-based car washes in the entire U.S.
Okay.
Because it's such a fragmented industry, but there's been a lot of like foreign companies have come in and acquired a bunch of car washes.
Gotcha.
But as far as U.S.-based, I mean, he's definitely they're the biggest car wash company in the Carolinas.
And they're based out of Charlotte. So what was your connection or what was your intrigue with trying to get in front of him with the waterless car wash?
I honestly just wanted to pick his brain.
Okay.
At that point in my career, I mean, we had actually met doing. That's the funny part about it. And like, if there's any students listening to this,
mm-hmm.
I started the business with $25, and mm-hmm. my partner used $25.
Yeah.
We started a car wash business that introduced me to the guy who started DoubleClick in California and sold for like 2. Some billion to Google.
Yeah.
A car wash business.
Yeah.
So it was, you know. And there was a lot of, you say, connection points. You know, I was wearing a bright yellow T-shirt, and we'd come in and wash a car hood because no one knew what a car wash, waterless car wash was.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't coming in suits and ties. We were just being ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that point in my career, I was like, I'm trying to get connected to as many people as I can mm-hmm. and share my story to many people as I can because I want to see if it'll stick with somebody. And I thought Carl Howard was the guy, and in fact, it was Mike.
Gotcha.
And, you know, it was, for me, that was the biggest blessing because I was either, between those two decisions, I was either coming to Charlotte mm-hmm. or I was going to San Francisco. I had two different opportunities to chase the startup world in San Francisco or come here to Charlotte. I think I would have been fine either direction, but I'm a blue-collar boy at heart, I've come to find, which has been, you know, it's been a fascinating journey from that point in 2016 to now, kind of what has progressed and how I've grown professionally. And also, you know, just, I mean, just every part of me has grown just from that one decision of, you know what, let's give this Charlotte thing that I don't even know what this opportunity is try. Yeah.
We understand the frustrations HOA board members and property managers face when deciding the best solution for their HOA and pool security. Should we use a keypad, hand out keys, or install a key card system? Do we even need cameras? These are some of the questions that are difficult to navigate, and we're here to help. At LockDock Security, we've spent over 20 years working with homeowners associations and property managers to find a system that best fits the pool and HOA needs. Camera systems for the front gate or front entrance, key card systems for the pool gates, or simply updating the gate so that it meets safety and code compliance. We like to take the guesswork out of the process to answer any questions and help find the right solution. Our mission is to help you protect your people and your property, and that includes pools. Contact our team today to schedule your free consultation for your community.
It is intriguing to me because now you have gone through kind of all these different steps. So you get connected with Mike Griffin, who has already had a viable functioning business, multiple locations, right? In the automotive repair, tire, yes. Yep. Tire world. Okay. Now you're connected up with that and he's interested in investing into young people
yep.
to grow businesses.
Yep.
And very much in, I guess, in it's mostly focused in the service world, correct?
Yeah, mostly in the trades.
In the trades.
So they have investments now since me. I mean, they've got plumbing, heating and air, restoration, so water and fire restoration. They've got a landscaping business. They have an electrical business, mm-hmm. a septic and grease trap pumping business. They have a auto body repair business. These guys are going to kill me if I miss them. Maybe roofing business. Mm-hmm. And their goal, and when we started this, it was the Griffin brothers were going to be the bank, the coach, and the consultant, and take a minority stake.
Yep.
So me, I'm the majority owner of Ease Plumbing and Air. Mike and them are the coach and the consultant, and if I need the money, they fund it, they fuel it,
yep.
which as any young entrepreneur, that's glorious because, you know, I jokingly told my buddies, they said, well, you know, how is Ease growing so fast? I said, I'm playing Monopoly.
Yeah.
They said, what do you mean? I said, I don't have to worry about the money. And, you know, the more I got in the business, the more I realized, hey, this business will grow itself. You know, I can grow it really fast or I can grow it really slow. And I had a backstop where mm-hmm. I could go and I could recruit top quality plumbers, top quality heat and air techs, because mm-hmm. I could say, hey, I'm not a 26-year-old that owns this
sure,
business.
Yeah.
I'm a 26-year-old that's backed by a 60-year-old family business that's been in Charlotte for 60 years
yeah.
and has taken care of thousands of employees. And that's what was so special to me. And that's what's been so special to my employees. And that's why we have the retention rate like we do. And that really is the magic of our growth. It's an ambitious young person with backing.
So the interesting component about all this is the, you know, trades companies, right? In the service companies in the trade world, typically, and we've had this conversation, I feel like kicked around so many times, but it typically starts with somebody that's really good in the trade and then it tries to grow their business, but typically is mired down too much in dealing with the day-to-day of being in the trade. Where have you seen, and because this is an interesting dynamic, because you weren't in the trade, you came in from the business development side or from the entrepreneurship side and then partnering with people that are in the trade. How have you seen that to be a benefit in a growth mindset versus the reverse, which is build it from the ground up with somebody that is a good tradesman?
I mean, I could answer that 10 different ways, but I got humbled really early. So yes, I didn't come from the trades, but I knew in order for me to gain the respect of these, my team members, mm-hmm. I had to get in the trenches. I had to dig the holes. I had to get blankety blank blasted on me and
sure.
you know, any plumber is going to know what I'm talking about. But yeah. I there's a book I read, and I actually read it about 9 months after starting the business, and it's called The E-Myth.
Yep.
You've probably heard of it. And, you know, it talks about the technician, the entrepreneur, and the manager, and we all have different parts of those different type qualities. And no, I wasn't a technician, but I was a technician in my own right, which was I knew how to book calls. I knew how to, you know, I knew how to get people to where they were going during the day. I knew how to deal with customers. And so, you know, what happens when a plumber starts his business is that he just wants to be a technician and he just wants to fix stuff and he doesn't want to manage people. And so I've, you know, really, you know, I guess coming from the business side, I have learned that, you know, the more in the weeds I get in my business, the worse it is because I can't grow it. Now, I can micromanage the heck out of it and I can have a really, really small business and very successful here in Charlotte, but my business will never become what I want it to become if I don't step back. And the schooling I had at Keenum Flagler, I mean, that did teach me some of those things, but also it's been taught to me in the field when Austin gets in the way, I cause destruction. Now, sometimes I create a lot of benefit and I create a lot of growth.
Yeah.
But anybody going through what I'm going through, you know, in the probably the 15 employees to the 40 employees are in that no man's land of what's next, you know, when do I hire the next manager? There's probably never a right time, but it's probably never too early. And I think I learned really quickly how to, you know, just hire slower, fire faster. You know, all these things have been just, you know, the trades will break you or make you. And, you know, especially, you know, I love my guys to death, and I tell people all the time, you know, well, what's the best part of your job, Austin? And I said, the best part's the worst part. You know, the best part's manage these employees. The worst part is manage these employees because it is sometimes the hardest. It is so hard because of the fact that, you know, these guys are looking at a 26-year-old who doesn't have experience, and so I have to put myself below them at all times because I have to rely on them. Hey, you got to go fix this. And, you know, every plumber I got, I would trust them in your mom and dad's house.
Yeah.
And that's something that I couldn't have said 6 months ago, but I can say it today.
Yeah.
And it's come through a whole lot of hard work and a whole lot of sweat and crying and tears and you name it.
No, the whole philosophy around that, I've often told people that I'm not in the security business, I'm in the people development business because that's ultimately what my job is, what my role is. And, you know, you talk about developing employees, building employees, training people, all of those types of things. That's a big part of what a business owner does if you're in the right mindset, because you can micromanage and you can do all those other things and cause destruction because you get in the way. So it's an interesting, I'm just processing a lot of this and going, it's so applicable because it's very day-to-day, very practical in a sense of you want as a leader in your organization to have the respect of your team by not putting yourself in a situation where people could perceive that you're too good or above doing particular tasks in the organization, but also leveraging or mitigating the fact that when you do get involved in some of those tasks, you're almost putting the business at a disadvantage. As a young business owner, as you're learning this on a day-to-day basis, what are the things that you would say to folks that have gone through this process farther on, that have been dealing with this for a longer period of time, things that you've learned kind of through the process of, I guess, just life experience?
So you're saying like somebody who's been in business for 20 years that never reached the point of 20 employees?
Yeah, I mean, because of the fact that they spend too much time getting stuck in those causing destruction moments.
Well, so that was the big benefit from now where I'm sitting, because of the fact I got to be with Mike for 2.5 years. So we interviewed probably 50 business owners in Charlotte.
Okay.
And these guys owned a high-end limousine company to a commercial HVAC company to a septic pumping business of all walks of life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and they all had the same story. I mean, they were 55 to 65, you know, they were burnt out, yet you were meeting with them in their 7,000 square foot house, and their wife drove a Cadillac. They have a house at the beach. They got a house at the mountains. So they stayed in their lane, and they said, well, I wish I would have grown. And we, you know, the more we listened to them, the more we were like, you couldn't have, and you're better for not growing. And so there is this kind of catch 22 of, you know, it's either you stay small and you stay profitable and you stay in your lane and that's what you know. But if you know, like me, I want to become the largest employee-owned service company in the United States, my mentality is much different than that of a technician, a tradesman, because, you know, he just wants, he or she just wants to be here. Mm-hmm. And those stories, they'll make you, they make you cry. Cause they're like, you got a guy who's 65 years old and the wife pretty much ran the business. He just went out and fixed stuff. You know, she's watching the best story I ever heard. And these guys, I mean, they probably never listen to this, but they were out of Granite Falls. Mm-hmm. I won't name any names, mm-hmm. but they did about $3 million in revenue and the dude brought home $500,000 to $700,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That's a whole lot of money to most people.
Yeah.
And I'm from the 828, so I can say it. That's a ton of money. And he owned a mountain, and he was 40 years old.
Yeah.
And his wife was a full-time nurse. Mm-hmm. She became a full-time CPA. Mm-hmm. She had to drop out of being a nurse, and she had to raise their three kids. And she ran the business. She answered the phone. She managed with the employees, and the husband just went out and ran things, and they were burnt out. And I was like, holy moly, like there is so much opportunity in this space. If this little tiny business with 12 employees can make this much money, but also too, there's a lot of these companies that need help. Mm-hmm. And if I can, and I can tell more about my business plan later, but if I can alleviate a lot of that stress, which is the HR, the accounting, the marketing, the dispatch, how successful can I make a tradesman?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what built me up. And that's also what made me see, hey, Austin, you're 25 when you started this business. You don't want to have a heart attack when you're 29.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what do I got to do to get myself in the place? And yes, granted, I do have a backbone of the Griffin brothers and the money and the financing and all the support. But also, too, it's stressful some days.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've learned the more calm I am, the more less stressed I am, and the better the business does, the more I don't put my hands in it.
Yeah. No, man. You don't understand, I don't know, maybe you do understand, but the story that you just told is repeated over and over and over again. You look at it in probably any tradesman, in any trade environment with in the service industry, there becomes a max point where people have outgrown their capacity to manage,
mm-hmm.
but they also don't want to let go
mm-hmm.
to grow, right?
They don't want to pay somebody more money than they don't want to give up money. They got to step backward to go 10 steps forward.
Well, I think that there's a lot of different capacities with that. Some of it may be financial, I don't know, but there's a lot of you have to relinquish control to grow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've had these conversations with a lot of folks before is if you want to grow, you do have to let go of certain things because you've got to release them so that they can get bigger or better. And people get to a point where they're comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
They're confident and they don't want to release that. But in the same mindset, it requires a lot of energy to continue to maintain.
So I'll tell you this last story. This is one of the funniest ones. So we were down in Chester, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of the first businesses we ever looked at.
Yeah.
So it was Mike didn't show up. It was me, Reese Blackwell, who's the guy who actually runs the Greenway Waste Solutions, which is a septic and grease trap pumping company. Mike Griffin's dad, who was like 78 at the time. And we were going down there to meet a restoration company, and long story short, the guy had done $1 million in revenue 3 years prior,
mm-hmm.
and in the previous year, he'd done $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Mr. So-and-so, why has the revenue dropped? He said, I'll tell you what, Austin, I hired this marketing girl. She thought she was all that and a baked potato. I put her in a lettered-up PT Cruiser, and she was selling the heck out of my stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to work that much, so I fired her. And it was like light bulb. What? Like ding, 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 ding. Here we go.
Yep.
And then that was the big turning point for me. And that was in 20. That was like early 2017, maybe late 2016.
Mm-hmm.
That I was like, there is so much opportunity mm-hmm. in this space.
Mm-hmm. You just go out and start to actually ask people for business, and it actually works.
Answer the phone.
I've had a conversation with lots of folks before. If you answer the phone and they're friendly, you give people price to do the work and then actually show up and do it, you can grow your business. It's a really simple business plan that a lot of folks aren't willing to do.
Just a reminder, you're listening to the Coffee Break Podcast. Also, we wanted to let you know that our team puts together a weekly blog post. You can find it at locdoc.net/blog. It's guaranteed to raise your IQ by 12 points or your money back. So it's pretty much a win-win. All right, back to the conversation.
So, okay, let's jump into this because we're all over the place, but it's very
my life.
It's very valid information. What is your business plan? You've alluded to it a couple of times.
So I said the irony, Chick-fil-A. So I own a plumbing and heating and air business. So my business plan is to take young people or seasoned technicians. Mm-hmm. When I say that, 35 to 45, because your average technician right now is probably 55, 56,
mm-hmm.
and they're aging out.
Mm-hmm.
Take them into a place where They're not getting paid commission, mm-hmm. but they're getting paid on the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So we actually, they get their license in heat and air plumbing. We put them in a market. So we call it a market leader, mm-hmm. where they're getting 50% of the bottom line plus a salary. Mm-hmm. And then they are getting essentially bought out by the next generation. So we're trying to create an accounting slash legal firm for trades.
Okay.
So the reason I said Chick-fil-A for trades is because that's how Chick-fil-A ownership works, is that they get 50% of the bottom line just as long as they're operating it, mm-hmm. just as long as they're working hard, taking care of customers, taking care of their employees. And the biggest fear of any tradesman owner is that you bring a guy or girl in at 18 years old and mm-hmm. you build them into a rock star by 25 and they say, see ya, going mm-hmm. to start my own other business. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is like say, really promote that, and then they will actually financially benefit if that person leaves and starts another branch. So our first branch is actually starting this week in Greenville, North Carolina. I'll be going down to Greenville tomorrow morning early, Greenville North, not Greenville South. And, you know,
the lesser known Greenville.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's slowly catching on, but as soon as I can get like 2 to 3 of these markets that have proven, and we're going to Winston-Salem later in the year, and we're also going to be appointing a Lake Norman market leader. So I'm kind of stepping down from being over the whole ship up there.
Sure.
I think it's just a matter of time. If you've seen the movie, The Founder, mm-hmm. you know, not that I'm saying that Ray Kroc is a godsend, but what I'm saying is there was a point where in the movie where he was begging people, do this, you're gonna make more money, do this. And they're mm-hmm. like, nah, this ain't it. And then one or two people became successful, and here they came. Mm-hmm. And so I really believe that there's no other opportunity like this in Charlotte, no other opportunity like this in the Southeast, because no one's giving away half the bottom line in a market mm-hmm. and taking away all the financial responsibility. These technicians don't have to put any money down. Mm-hmm. They just have to hold their license with the company. They don't deal with marketing. They don't deal with accounting. They don't deal with the dispatch. They just be technicians, and they manage their technicians, and they make sure that those customers are treated the right way every single time. Mm-hmm. And if not, they make it right.
Yeah.
And I think everything will take care of itself.
It's an interesting philosophy, because at the end of the day, service companies are going to rise and fall based off of the service that they're providing.
Mm-hmm.
And empowering that at the most extended point of contact directly with the customer. Mm-hmm. If you're empowering that, then you're gonna feel the effects all the way through the organization.
Exactly.
That's very interesting. And even such, you know, we've talked about it around here a lot. The marketing, the HR, all of those types of things. Those are the typical things that trades folks don't like to deal with. Like mm-hmm. it's like the detriment of the, and most likely the part where they get to building the organization to a certain point and then going, all right, I'm done. Like, because I don't want to deal with this. You know, I've got my 15 folks that have been here for a while. We are all kind of good. I don't want to rock the boat anymore.
Exactly. And my day starts probably about 7, and I get home, you know, 6:30, in between 6 and 7, and I don't touch accounting. Mm-hmm. I don't touch the paperwork and HR. The Griffin Brothers handle that. If I had to touch all that stuff,
yeah,
whew, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation today, because I probably have 6 employees.
Yeah.
And so that piece, and really you don't understand it until you actually go out and do it. So mm-hmm. like, you know, if I get an employee who says, you know what, I don't want to do your plan, that's fine. Like, go do it on your own.
Yeah.
But there's a difference.
Yeah.
And there's also a difference when you say, hey, I want to take on this $50,000 job. Ooh, that's a big risk if it's by myself. But if I had this Griffin Brothers behind me, mm-hmm. oh, do it. Boom. Yeah. Don't be worried about getting paid, because you know you got the backing if you fall. And so, you know, I've been pitching it for about a year, and we finally opened the market, and I'm so excited. This young man's name, Aaron Williams, he is full of fire. He's full of energy. Mm-hmm. He's 24 years old. He's been a plumber for 6 years, and he got his P1 master license. And I can't be more excited about what he wants to do. And now, granted, I wanted to keep him in Charlotte, but he loves his hometown of Greenville.
Yeah.
So we're investing in him just because of how special of a kid he is. But you know, I think it's just a matter of time. And I've told these technicians, it's like, you know, me personally, I'm trying to show you, I won't be successful unless I get 10 to 20 of these things being successful. Like, personally, feel the effects.
Yeah.
You know, yes, I could hold my little business here in Charlotte and make good money. But if I get 10 or 20 of these successful, this whole thing is going to go whoop and blow up, and we're going to have something really special.
Sure.
But if I don't make these first early people successful, then it's not going to, then my job's not getting done. So I have to make sure that these technicians, and we're, you know, our goal in Charlotte is to have anywhere from 4 to probably 7 of these markets.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you really look at the whole greater Charlotte market, it's humongous.
Yeah.
And there's hundreds of plumbers, one guy's in a truck here, hundreds of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much opportunity. so much room for growth. And I always laugh, it's because all my buddies who are buying houses, they don't know a thing about their house. And I love it because I do. So the opportunity just keeps getting greater and greater.
Very cool. Very cool. Austin, I appreciate you coming in today. You definitely a lot of energy. Really exciting to see this type of momentum happening in the trades world, because if a lot of folks can embrace this and understand this, then it can be great growth opportunity for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. Because figuring out ways to put people that have great technical aptitude in a position that they can be successful, mm-hmm, is ultimately a great plan.
Exactly.
And I think that it gets to the point where you have, if you can create a comfortable environment, create a confident environment where people can do that, then there's definitely a way to build success.
Exactly.
So very cool. Austin, thank you very much for being here. You obviously, if folks want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
So they can call our main office, which is 704-740-EASE. So 704-740-3273. Or you can now actually book on our website. So it's easeplumbing.com or easeac.com. So we also do heating and air. I merged with a heating and air business last June.
Naturally.
So, don't call my personal cell phone because I'll tell you to call the office. But you're welcome to reach out to me. Somebody will get you a hold of me.
So thank you very much for joining us today. Great conversation with Austin. Really appreciate his energy and his time today. We chatted even more before and even more after. There was so much information there. Great individual to connect with. If you obviously want to connect with him, be sure to do that. You can connect with him online and LinkedIn as well. Great young man. A lot of excitement there and a lot of energy. We thank you very much for joining us today, for watching, and for listening. If you haven't done so, make sure you subscribe. We've got a new episode every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. and we want you to be a part of it. Don't miss out on any episodes. So make sure you hit the subscribe button. Go find us. Go follow that on YouTube and Facebook for the video version. And then whatever podcast platform you enjoy listening on, it's available there for you as well. Every Tuesday at 9 a.m., brand new episode. We're over 100 episodes. So a lot of information. You can go back and check out some old episodes that are all around business ideas, practices, and strategies. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time right here on the Coffee Break Podcast.